So we're starting a new perek today from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh. The daf is Psachim, daf Ayin Dalet. And we begin Ketzat Tzol in the actual preparation of the Korban Pesach. And as usual, we're going to use, it's absolutely amazing how consistent this is throughout the Masechet. We are going to use the Dinim of the Pesach and the way of preparing the Pesach as a model for examining Dinim of Kashrus in general, when you cook things the way you would cook a Korban Pesach, which leads to all kinds of questions. What's going to be with how's the blood going to be getting out of an animal that you're supposed to roast and all in one? And if you're putting stuff in it, isn't that like cooking it with the blood and so on? This, of course, turns out to be nogea all of the dinim of kashrus. In a sense, many of the things that focus in Maseches Chulin, we're focused on in the dinim of Taroves, the dinim of Basar B'Cholov, where these things are so nogea, are really find their original model in the dinim of Pesach, and we're going to touch on all of them, which is why this Pesachet is a very, very chock-full Pesachet. So today it's literally chock-full, and Ketzat Solinat HaPesach. So how would we go about roasting the Korban Pesach? Mevi'in Shput Shel Rimon. So the first thing we do is we bring a spit that is made out of pomegranate for some reason. We're going to discuss what is so special about pomegranate wood. And you push it through the mouth of the korban. It comes out on the other end, which means that the thick part of the wood is going to be on the mouth because the sharper point went through its anus. And that means that when you hold the korban upside down, which is the way that it's held on the spit, it won't fall off. So this way, the thicker part of the branch, which is your shpud, will be in the place that the mouth is at. You take the legs and the b'nei me'ayim that you've washed out and so on, you put them inside of the korban itself. So says Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Rabbi Akiva says, no, you can't do that because that would be the same. Well, he doesn't say it would be the same. He says it would be like. Kamin Bishul, he would say, says that's like cooking it. So in other words, according to him, it seems to be more of a problem, not that it would be an Isser Bishul if it were done b'yavad, but it's Kamin Bishul. So it's like cooking it because you're taking something that was not part of it and you're putting it inside and now it's enclosed by basically by a pot. What's the pot? The body of the korban itself. And inside of it, you're putting other things. So that's going to be cooking all of these fluids that are inside, all of the fats and blood and whatever. And why isn't that like cooking? Elotolin chutzala, actually, all of those things are going to be hung on the spit itself, but outside of the rest of the korban. You remember before we had one of the pshatim of Gedi Mikulas was that it looks like a knight who keeps his sword on the side of the body. Over here, Rashi takes the other approach, which is Mikulas is helmeted. And helmeted would mean that we put these parts actually above the mouth on the shpud, which would mean that it looks like a helmet. Continues the Mishnah, but you cannot use metal, and you cannot use a grill. So, ein solinat ha-pesach lo ala shpud, meaning a normal metal spit, velo al askela, and not on a barbecue grill. Because over there, what's going to happen is, as we'll see in the Gemara, is that the metallic heat is actually going to cause the tzliya as opposed to the direct fire. And it says tzliyesh. Because of the higher conductivity of metal, it's got to be get there before the actual fire that heated the metal does, and that's us. Omar Rabbi Tzadok, Maaseh Berabban Gamliel, She'amar L'Tavi Avdo, Tzei Utzalei Lanu Et HaPesach Ala Askela. I know, could tell you a case where Rabbi Gamliel said to his Eved Tavi, go out and roast us a Korban Pesach on a barbecue grill. So apparently he held it was mutter. Now, there's a big question over here about how to understand this Mishnah, and it also serves as a very important lesson, because the question is, Rabbi Gamliel, if we're talking about Rabbi Gamliel, not Rabbi Gamliel as Zakein, which is the way we normally understand the Tavi Avda relationship, Rabbi Gamliel, he lived after the Churban. He did not leave before the Churban. Now, we could, of course, say it's Rabbi Gamliel HaZaken, but the Mashmot in other places is that the Tavi relationship was not with that Rabbi Gamliel. So it's very interesting because actually, you know, in the time of all the controversies about the coming back to Eretz Yisrael, and there were all types of movements that wanted to start up bringing korbanos. So the Yaivitz, who happens to be one of my great-grandfathers, so he wanted to bring a raya from the Mishnah over here that they used to bring korbanos even after the Churban, and which Meikra did, according to the Rambam, its own would not be a problem. And so that became a big that became a big political football as to, okay, so why can't we do that today? That's why this came up at the same time that they had supposedly rediscovered Treles, which really had nothing to do with Treles, but was sort of a big fake out. But anyway, the Regina's Treles was a political disaster because the big excuse that was had at that time for not following those shittas and starting up bringing korbanos again for Pesach and so on was because, well, what can you do? We don't have any kohenim because a kohen without his beged is not a kosher kohen, so he's the same as a tzar, and we don't have treles, so therefore we can't make that. And then when the Regina showed up with what he claimed with treles, you could imagine the disaster. That's why everybody went out and, oh, that can't be treles, which was true. It wasn't treles. But anyway, so this was all part of that. Now, there are those who learn the Mishnah. It's very interesting. This was the lesson that I mentioned to you earlier. There are those who learn the Mishnah is talking about that he used to make a meat that was grilled. This is Rabbi Gamliel, Rebbe's grandfather, not Rabbi Gamliel HaZaken. It was after the Churban. He didn't bring any Pesach, and he used to eat bedafka grilled meat, zecher lePesach, at the Seder. But in order that it shouldn't be confused with the Korban Pesach, he was careful to avoid the Gdima Kulas. So he said, make us our ersatz Pesach on the barbecue. So it would be very clear to everybody this wasn't eating kachim b'chutz, like the old story we had before with Tudas, the one who almost got into big trouble, Umole Tudas Ata. But anyway, that is connected the way the Gemara understands it. And it's a very interesting thing that the many of the Rishonim, and the Rambam is notorious for that, and the Gra actually would do that all the time, would be mefarish a Mishnah, not like the Gemara. We've seen that, by the way, in some of the Gras that we've been learning in Oalot, and which is Keneged Sugyas in the Gemara, because the Pirish of a Mishnah is not specifically the way the Gemara comes out understanding it. Remember, the point of a Mishnah is that it is multi-leveled, and Rebbe, we remember, had Yud Gimel of Fanim that he put into the Mishnah. Because of that, nobody is specifically Zohir not to give you alternative explanations for a Mishnah. We see this in many of the Mefarshei Mishnah. So this is what shows up in the Seder HaDoros over here in this Mishnah. In any event, it's not such a terrible thing that you can ask on somebody, but the Gemara says not like that about the Mishnah. That is the side of the Mishnah we bring La Halacha. Okay, anyway, so a bit of a question. Which Rebbe Gamliel, was this a Korban Pesach that he was actually being matir, or just the opposite, which is the way the Gemara understands it, as we'll see, or just the opposite? Did he go out of his way to show this wasn't a Korban Pesach because Bizmano, there was no longer a Pesach? Ask the Gemara, what's wrong with metal? Why are we talking about what kind of wood? I'm a granite wood of all crazy things. Why can't we use metal? Well, that's because metal is a good conductor. And if that's the case, I mean, some of this metal is going to be very close to the fire, right? And because of that, it's going to heat up the metal that's inside. And that is going to mean that before the actual flame has an impact on the Korban Pesach, the internal and inside the carcass heat of the spit is going to be cooking the meat before it's exposed to the flame, which would mean that this would not be tzli esh. And the Torah says it has to be tzli esh. And because of that, kamat ve machmat shapod, and the Torah rachman amar tzli esh, velo tzli machmat avar acher. So this, albeit be it roasted, but it is not roasted from the fire. Okay, all right, fine. So I understand that's a conductivity issue, but I mean, certainly pomegranate wood is not a different type of conductor than other wood, is it? I mean, it can't be that much of a difference of the coefficiency of the factor of the pomegranate versus, I mean, use palm. Actually, palm is better because, I mean, in a sense, you don't have all of those problems. Palm doesn't have any branches coming out of it, so you don't have that issue of where there was branching. There's going to be leakage of liquid from inside the capillaries of the wood. You should bring palm. Nate, they shall decal. No, you can't bring decal. Because actually, palm itself has very deep grooves in which it has all of these this capillary action that has a lot of liquid in it. And because of that, if you use palm, the liquid is going to come out all across the spud, and then that means you're going to be cooking it in liquid, and that is for sure no good. You're not allowed to have any other liquid that's inside, because once that heats, it's going to be mevushal, and that's aser. Basha mevushal b'may. Okay, so bring fig. No, fig, you're right, that fig does not have the grooves that palm does, but it's mechalchel, and it because of that, there's a lot of sap inside fig wood, and it has, it's actually, you could view it as being even hollow, because it's filled with sap. And that sap is going to be mevushal. So you can't use that either. Okay, fine. I mean, you're talking about special cases. Why? This, of course, is the derech of the Gemara to note, go from the more obvious case to the less obvious case. So, I mean, we could bring things that for sure don't have that level of sap. I mean, you could use oak, right? You could use charuvim. You could use sycamore. I mean, those were common trees, says the Gemara. Yes, but they have knots. Okay, and those knots, I did eat pekitre, mafik maya. Those knots, wherever there was a joint, they will let liquid come out directly into the animal. Well, so does pomegranate. I mean, pomegranate's got branches. Every place has a branch, there's a knot. So, shorimo nami eat pekitre. If you're going to worry about the kitre, why do you allow us to use pomegranate? Yes, but pomegranate knots are very different. Because when you cut the area where the lumber was up against a place that it branched off, the knot that is left is very smooth as opposed to the jagged knot that you have on other kinds of wood. And it's smooth and therefore is not going to, it's almost as if it's a surface directly with the lumber itself, and therefore it doesn't let out water. Or, you know what? I mean, maybe Anakinami, maybe the Mishnah is saying you have to use a young pomegranate that has not as yet reproduced. There's no knots in it because there's no branching on it. So we're talking about a Navga Barshata Dalet Bekitre. So it's within its first year and it doesn't have any knots yet. Well, what about, I understand, but I mean, this is not a tree. It's itself a part of a tree. So, I mean, what about where it was cut? Vayikebe Psake. Obviously where it's cut is sticking out of the carbon. I mean, it's not inside. The mafik lebe paske levar. So basically what we have over here is a situation where you have the beit hashchita, where you have a very wide opening to allow any blood that's left inside the animal, together with any other liquids that are coming out. All of that is going to drip out of the beit hashchita. That is facing downwards. And anything that would be leaking out of the pomegranate spit itself will also be falling out downwards. We'll not be going back up into the Korban Pesach and cause it to be boiled. Now, the Mishnah over here apparently is not going according to Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda says, well, ask yourself, why is it that the wood doesn't get burned, okay? I mean, doesn't wood burn when it's in a fire? So there's obviously a reason why it doesn't get burned. It doesn't get burned because of the fact that since it's inside of the animal, there's dissipation of the heat that is protected, and it's not going to get hot enough, right? So, I mean, if that's the case, so then the metal spit, because of the fact that it dissipates the heat and it's covered by the animal, is not going to get hot enough to cook the animal. So what's wrong with using a regular metal heat, a metal spit? There's a big difference. One is a good conductor and one is a poor conductor. I mean, it's very true that you've protected the wood by the fact that it's inside of the carbon, but protecting isn't the issue. The issue is whether it's transferring the heat to the inside, and Cham Miktzato, Cham Kulo. Whereas the wood, it's not true that Cham Miktzato over there, Eino Cham Kulo, because it does not conduct the heat. Now let's consider what we do with the legs and with the insides, the entrails. Notein et kra'av. So Rabbi Yosef Galili says, take everything, the kra'av and the b'nei me'ayim, and put it inside. And Rabbi Akiva says, this is like cooking it. So therefore we put it outside. Tanya, Rabbi Shmuel actually would put it inside, like Rabbi Yosef Galili. And he would call this tuch-tuch. Now it sounds like tuch-tuch. Now remember the word tuch-tuch we used before. When we're talking about something that is cooking, and it's cooking inside a pot, va'avi tuch-tuch. So that was simply reproducing the sound of something that is boiling away inside. And he would call this tuch-tuch, meaning as if to say, go bedavka out of his way. Maybe it was sort of a remez that he was using, playing around and saying tuch-tuch, meaning, yeah, it's inside, baby, tuch-tuch. Maybe that would be the point. But, I mean, there is another approach that the Rishonim bring that actually this is a word that is used elsewhere for, it's not tuch-tuch, it's a misspelling, but we'll keep this. Rabbi Tarfon Kareo Gidi Mikulas, and Rabbi Tarfon would bedafka hold not like that. He held like Rabbi Akiva, and he said, no, I always make a Gidi Mikulas, make a point of the fact that it's not tuch, but it's outside, and it looks like a helmet, the way Rashi's learning here, or like Rashi said before, it's like a knight who's carrying his sword on his side. Tone Rabbonan Ezu Gidi Mikulas Dasulecho Belele Pesach Bizman Azeh. Nowadays, we do not have that Gedi Mekulas, as we said before, and they ossered it because it looks like Urcho Kachem Bechutz. This would be any animal that you roast as a single unit. But if you cut off parts of it, so Nechtach Mimeno Eiver, or you boil parts of it, so then it's no longer, it's very clear that it's not a Korban Pesach. And because of that, it would be Mutter and, we don't answer like the whole, even though b'diavad, according to Tosfos, certainly it's kosher. I'm a chuyev in a sense that your Pesach is not called a Korban Pesach if you do it not as a Gedi Mekulas, but the iser of Gedi Mekulas would only be if it's really a complete and total Gedi Mekulas. And therefore, if you boiled even one part of it, that's not called a Gedi Mekulas. What are you going to tell me if you boiled it? I thought you said if you cut it off, you cut it off even if you roasted it. So if you boiled it, what's the chiddush? So nechtach mimeno ever. That means even though it's together with the rest of the animal when you roast it, right? So you say that's no Gedi Mekulas any longer. So what do you have to tell me if it's roasted? I mean, if it's not roasted, I mean, if it's boiled, obviously if it's boiled, I mean, then it's the cholent. It's not, but nobody's going to say that's Korban Pesach. Omer Fshesh, no, you don't understand. It doesn't mean that you cut it off and you put it into a pot and boiled it. It means if you had the carbon that was whole, right, but like, let's say part of it that was you took a big pot, you put part of it while it was still attached to the rest, and you boiled that. I'm just talking about shlakobi mechubar. That too is not considered gedi mekulas. So not only do you not consider it to be gedi mekulas if you took off a piece, but even if you left a piece, but that piece was boiled, it would not be confused with a Korban Pesach. Now this leads us to a very fascinating general question of kashrus, which is, can you make kishka? Or would you be allowed to take meat and put it inside? You'd be stuffing meat into other meat, and this meat, you didn't kosher this meat. And you're going to make a barbecue of, let's say, hamburger meat that you put inside of a chicken. Right? You're going to barbecue the chicken whole, with meat inside of it. So is that going to be a problem of dam that is going to aser? Because, I mean, it looks like it's what we're doing over here. We're putting stuff inside. We took out the b'nei me'ayim. We washed everything off. We're stuffing it inside, according to Rabbi Yossi. We didn't kosher it or anything. So isn't the blood that comes out of that, isn't that going to aser the actual body of the Korban Pesach? So that type of thinking is what the Gemara is going to get into over here. Now, this leads to another question, which is one of the most vicious machlokas, the Rambam and the Ravid. You know, the Ravid sometimes didn't mince words. Well, talking about this minced meat over here, whew, he sort of minces the Rambam's approach. So what happens is the Rambam, when he talks about the practical dinim, okay, what do you do? So you finish roasting the Korban Pesach, you know, and then you when you're taking it apart, so then you carefully take out the Gidan Nosha, and you take out any of the areas that had Chalev. So the Ravid says, well, I can tell you one thing. If I am Zoche to live to bring a Korban Pesach, and somebody brings me a Rambam Korban Pesach, I will take it and throw it on the floor and stomp on it. Ein lecha iser gadol mizeh. Whoever heard of such a thing? You're going to make a Korban Pesach with a Gidan Nosha inside of it and all the treif of fats inside of this thing is totally treif. Woo. Anyway. So that is, of course, the part of the concerns of our Gemara. I mean, like, what happens? See, the Rambam understands this is nogea not only dam, but this is nogea all of the issues that are non-kosher elements inside of the animal. I mean, like, how did we get rid of all of the chalev that was usser? I mean, did we do all of that? I mean, if we didn't get rid of the dam, apparently we didn't get rid of it. We certainly didn't open up. It doesn't say anywhere to open up the legs, take out the gidan nosha and triber it or anything like that. So what's going on? So that's exactly what Rabbah is raising over here. Says Rabbah, you see from here that stuffing a muliata is okay because that's what we do over here. Omar le Abaye, why? I mean, doesn't the actual body of the carbon, is that going to be absorbing blood from the raw meat that you put inside of it? Omar le, now, by the way, the famous machlokas, which, of course, most of the discussion is in Yeridaya and in the Masechet Chulin, Prokim, to deal with these issues. There's a big question. Machlokas Rishonim, represented over here by Rashi and Tosis, but many of the Rishonim get into the action, is when we're talking about this muliata, or we're talking in general about Basar that we're going to do tzli on, the question is, does it require salting or not? Now, Rashi learns that you salt it a little bit before roasting, which is what we do, the Ashkenazim do anyway, when it comes to liver. So you salt it there's a little bit before roasting. And Tosfos says there's absolutely no meaning to putting any salt on before roasting because roasting gets out more blood than salting does, and therefore there's not a problem. In general, just to remind you, there is no isser of eating blood that is part of the meat. The only time that it's usser, as a matter of fact, what they used to do, which we'll be looking at later on in the Gemara, is they used to actually put the meat into vinegar or scald it in order to cauterize the opening of the meat so that the blood would not come out. Because the only isser of that dam is once it was purish. If it's inside of the meat, you just have a piece of raw meat, you don't need to kasher that at all. You can simply eat it raw, and that's not a problem. So what if you want to go ahead and you want to cook it after you do that? So what they used to do is simply cauterize it so that then even if you would roast it, not roast it, boil it, the blood wouldn't come out, and therefore it would be kosher to eat just like that. The Gaonim Aser to do that. And because of that, we no longer do it because there's a big question about how long it sits in the vinegar. If it sits too long, then on the contrary, the vinegar starts drawing out blood. Anyway, so there's a takon of the ge'enim not to do it, which is why all of these sugyas seem very strange to us because it isn't done. But the question over here, of course, therefore would be the blood that is left inside, and of course, where you've got a barbecue, you don't get out all of the blood. There's especially if you're talking about our Joburg friends over here. I mean, the bloodier the better, right? So what do you do about that? I mean, isn't that dam? So again, there's no isser of dam. That's the point. The dam, if it's in the meat, is not a problem. So what we're talking about over here is the problem of blood that came out because of the heating and then was absorbed by the meat that's around it. That's the problem. So then you're not in your natural blood. You're now being cooked in the blood of this other meat. So why doesn't that aser the carbon itself? So Rabbah said, what's the problem? Kivol a kach polta. Listen, anything that's absorbed is immediately, what's the opposite of absorption? How do you say plita in the exuded, maybe, is exuded. So in other words, whatever is absorbed is in a process, obviously. I mean, that's the only way it can work chemically, is that you're constantly exchanging the molecules over here in order to maintain the balance that you have outside of the meat and inside of the meat. So anything that was absorbed is also exuded. And therefore, you don't end up with any blood that came from the outside any more than its own blood. And therefore, that's not a problem. And we have a general rule that when something is heating and now it's in a process of exuding things, it will not keep things that it absorbs from the outside. I don't know. Secretion is usually a biological process, not a chemical process, I think. Name a misayel. So, maybe we can bring a riot to this, because doesn't it say, now he was talking about it in general. Okay, we're the ones that are now saying, well, isn't that, that's our Mishnah, right? The Mishnah says, notenet k'ravet b'nei me'av l'tocho. How are you allowed to put it back into the korban? It must be because kibolo kach polto, says the Gemara. Not necessarily, because remember, the way that we're doing it over here is not the way we normally would do a stuffed chicken with meat and that kind of thing, or kishka or whatever. That's different, because over here, remember, the whole thing is hanging upside down, so that the Beis HaShechita, everything is dripping out of the Beis HaShechita, and that is mechalchel, that takes all of the liquids that are coming out of anywhere, goes directly out of the Beis HaShechita, and that's why the Korban Pesach may be a special case, and everything is mutter. So because of that, midav dayav, it's just simply, it drips out, and if it drips out, now that, of course, could be part of the Rambam's understanding. So that it drips out, which means that there is no chance for anything to really be absorbed. Okay, how about this, Bryce says? Raya to Rava, because, I mean, in general, you're right, Korban Pesach may be special, but what about this? Not talking about the Korban Pesach. If you have cooked the entire animal, so then you can take the heart, you tear it open. You're supposed to do this before you cook it, right? So you take the heart. And because of the fact that there is loose blood in the heart, the other organs don't have blood that they are pumping. So the problem with the heart is that the blood that you're going to find inside the chambers of the heart is not blood of the heart. And therefore, it's just plain dam that is usur, right? So you have to get rid of that. So you have to cut open the chambers of the heart to get out the blood before cooking it. But what happens if you don't? So then you could even cut it open, get rid of the dam after it's cooked, and it would still be mutter. Now, why would it still be mutter? Has it not absorbed that dam that was inside of its own chambers? Must be because Rabba is right, and kibol o kach polto, says the Gemara. Boy, that shows none of you are heart surgeons. The heart's totally different. Shiny lev d'shia. The whole point of the chambers of the heart is that they're lined with plastic for all intents and purposes. And that's exactly to make sure that there's not going to be any impact on coagulation and stuff like that. That you're, it's simply not going to absorb because it's protected by a plastic-like lining. So it's extremely smooth and therefore won't absorb. But that doesn't mean that normal meat is not going to absorb dam. And therefore the muliata may still be usher, not like Rob. Well, look, I could tell you that Ravin Saba, Tafla Yibar Guzla L'Rav, Ravin, it was the big gadol, the Zakein, and he, now, Tafla is a big question. Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos, the simple meaning of Tafla, remember, that's exactly the word, as Tosfos points out, that we spoke about when we were using these various ingredients as a depilatory. So tafle meant that you would put it on the dried and then it was used as a depilatory. I don't know. So that's a question of what that meant. Did it mean that you pulled it off, or did it mean that it itself actually burnt off hair? So Rashi learns that tafle means it's like a knisha that you make, meaning you've got this thick dough around it. Tosus learns that it's like breading it. So there would be nafkaminas halacha in this, but anyway, so either he breaded or he surrounded with a dough this little bird and cooked it. He roasted it, and he gave this to Rav, And Rav said, listen, you try it. If it tastes good, then give it to me and I'll eat it, okay? But I don't want to take any chances with your cooking, Robin, you know? So he said, Imale tafle, listen, if it tastes good, havli veichol, so I'll eat some too. So obviously it must be because kibolo kachpoto. Says, not necessarily, because over there, it might have been made with smida. Smida is the kind of fine flour that is crumbly. It's more like a cream of wheat. And that's crumbly. It allows any blood to get out. But maybe we wouldn't say kibolo kachpolto. Okay, so Rava, we know, once came to Beresh Galusa, and they did that for him. They were tafleleh abaruv. Obviously, they took a goose, and he said, I'll tell you one thing. I'm going to eat it. But if I hadn't seen with my own eyes that there's zero coloration, there's not even a hint of redness, this thing is as clear as glass, I wouldn't have eaten it. So, it's clear glass. I would not have put it in my mouth. Now, if you're going to tell me that kibol o kach polto, I mean, why does it have to be that clear? I mean, what's the problem? If it wasn't so clear, what's the big deal? I mean, things turn red from all of the juices that drip from meat. Doesn't mean it's blood. Why did he have to be certain that there was nothing in it, even if it had turned red, if you held kibol o kach polto? So then there wouldn't have been any dominant. It just would have been left with red coloration. So apparently we don't hold halacha lemaisa. We don't actually go like Rabba. No, over there was talking about they made the knish, according to Rashi. They made it with this white flour. This white flour is like, it's like paste. And it's like hard. It's shorir. So over there, it's not going to get rid of what it absorbed so quickly. The halacha is that if it's made out of semida, it doesn't even matter. Even if it leaves a little bit of red coloration, it's still okay. If it's white flour, then it has to have zero coloration and be clear as glass. And if not, it would be also. Normal flours that are not made out of this junk white flour stuff, in there, if it turned red, it's also. If it didn't turn red, it's mutter. It doesn't have to be clear as glass. Okay, getting back to the idea of stuffings. I'm Uliyata. So Mandi Osir, this machlokas that we seem to have over here, I mean, Rabbi is saying it's mutter. Those who say it's Osir, they hold it's Osir even if it were done the way the Karma Pesach were done, meaning that the Beis Hashchita is facing downwards towards the fire and it can drip out. They hold it would even be Osir in that case. And the reason is that even though when it comes to the Karma Pesach, obviously that's mutter, as we pointed out. However, remember that in this case, you've stuffed the inside of the animal with meat. And therefore, it does not have the same kind of room to run out. The blood's not going to run out from the Beis HaShechita the way it did in the Korban Pesach, because now you've got this chopped meat all over the place, and how's it going to get out? So, Mantashori, Mashiach, the one who holds its mutter because of Kibolo Kachpoto, yields, even if it's facing upwards, it would be mutter, because ultimately the fire is able to draw out everything. Now, this comes directly from the sugya in Chulin, that where you have, and there's two issues over here. One issue is blood that was obviously the result of a breaking of capillaries. So apparently this piece of meat had gotten a nice big zetz while it was alive, and it was walking around with an internal injury. And it's full of blood inside. And sometimes you see this on birds. We've got this bruise inside of the, you can see it in a chicken meat. And if you find it in meat, that you have this very dark discoloration of blood, that's called umtsa. And then there's other problems of blood where blood will gather. So let's say you have arteries. Those are called mizrake. And then you have blood that is not from the organ itself, that's like the heart. I mean, it's got blood that is part of the circulatory system. And there are places where you have this type of very enriched blood vessels that you need to worry about getting the blood out. So therefore, in the Gemara over there, the Gemara Chulin talks about three examples of this. Umtsa. So umtsa would be a piece of meat that was discolored by a lot of blood in one place. Bei refers to testicles. And Rashi understands that that is just a general din about the amount of blood that you find in a testicle, which you will often find as being specifically reddened. Tosfos says, no. Umta is umta. Testicles are because of the enhanced blood supply that surrounds a testicle for purposes of keeping it cool, and so on and so forth. That is a different issue, and that has to do with the same thing that Mizrachi has to do with, which is issues of blood that is left there that is not part of the dam of the Evarim. So in any event, but we've got these three issues. How, what is the din of cooking umta bei umizrachi on coals? So there's a machlokas of Rabbi and Ravina. Now, b'chol Torah kula, generally speaking, when we say one of them says and one of them says, and we don't know which one says what, and it's a machlokas between Rav Acha and Ravina, there's a rule. And the rule is that Rav Acha is always the one who goes l'chumra, and Ravina is only one, is the one who always goes l'kula, and we always paskin like Ravina who goes l'kula. In this case, however, these three cases, and it's known that these three cases go together, they did, the, here it's just the opposite. It's Rav Acha goes l'kula, it's Ravina who goes l'chumra, but the halacha remains the same in that we go l'kula, except this time we paskin like Rav Acha l'kula. So now getting into each one of these, the umtza was the piece of meat that got very red. If you cut it open, you salt it, then it's even allowed afterwards to cook in a pot, which we don't do, let's say, for liver, right? So our minhag is to be machmir, not to use melicha on liver and kasher the liver to be cooking in a pot. So we don't do that. And here it's saying if you salted it, you'd be allowed to put it into a pot, even though more blood is going to come out of it if you put it into a pot. We consider it that you got out all of the dam and everything else is just coloration of the meat, and it would be mutter even in a pot. And if you eat it, if you put it on a spit, then you're for sure you're allowed to eat it without salting, according to Rashi, a little bit of salting with sli, and that would be because meat of dayev. The blood is going to drip out during the roasting. Achte agumre, if you put it on coals, that's where the machlokas is. So that's a machlokas of Racha Ravina. One of them answers it, one of them is matir. The logic being, the one who answers it says, when you put it on the coal will cauterize it and will prevent the blood from dripping out. And the one who is matir, he is, in this case, was Rav Acha l'kula, he says that, no, on the contrary, the heat of the coal will draw the blood out, and that's how we pass it. Hilchata mishav shayiv, and you're allowed to do this. I think I mentioned to you once how I had a horrible 2-week-long experience where this was extremely nogea, and I was the mashgiach on a boat, and the people that had arranged the meat on the boat and throw me on as a poor innocent boy who was on his way to Eretz Yisrael and working his way across the ocean with his little family and thinks he's going to be having a lovely time doing the hashgacha, discovers that there's no kosher meat on the boat because all of the meat, I find it says on it, hudach v'lo nimlach. It was not salted, and it's been shechted for who knows how many months before, which you can only rely on salting at ex post facto if it's been frozen solid. And it turns out that the freezers on the boat didn't keep things frozen solid and you can smush it. So it was all treif. And I've got a boat full of Jewish kosher passengers. What in the heck? So I had to be extremely creative and figure out how we could use all of this stuff only through something that was would be matir because the dam would be midav daiv. You can imagine it got sort of boring, and the cooks were furious. My life was threatened by the chief steward. What could you do? Anyway, so this gemara was very, very nogea, and the same thing is true about these testicles. Chatchinu malchino, same exact thing. Afilu kedera sharian, cut them open and use salt. You could even cook in a pot. Tolino b'shpuda, if you roast, then it would be mutter because meat of daiv, and the only machlokas would be aktino agumre on the coals. So there we have the machlokas between Rav Acha and Ravina. One of them is matir, one of them asers. The reason of the asering is because it cauterizes. The other one holds that, on the contrary, the blood is drawn out. The same thing is true with the mizrachi, which are these arteries. Rashi learns that the major arteries in the neck, And there too, cut them open and you did malicha. Then you can even cook them in a pot. If you put them on a spit and the base of shechita is facing downwards, which will allow the arteries of the neck to drip out, then it's mutter because meat of daiv. If you put it on top of coals, and we have our machlokes of Racha Ravina, Chadoser v'chadshori, same issue, mandoser matzbisoris, mandoshori mishav shoyiv, and we paskin, as we said, lakula, that the blood is mishav shoyiv, and therefore it would kosher, would be kosher. Now, how about in a case where you have an umtsa da asmik? So you've got a piece of meat that is red. You had a lot of capillary damage over there. And the deal is that the chalye is usher. So then the gravy that comes out of it, this is how Rashi understands chalye. He gives two approaches. So chalye could mean it's gravy, or it could mean chala is vinegar. And chaye would mean the vinegar that you use to cauterize, which I mentioned to you earlier, that the Goni Master has to use, but that used to be very common, that you would cauterize the dam inside. That itself is usher because the efshed alayis beishuraike dam. It's got to have some kind of streaks of blood in it. Omale marbar amemel ravashi. I don't know, my dad Amemar used to love that stuff, and he would actually swallow it, and he would say, yeah, it's very healthy, it's delicious, give me more. Ikeni Amri Rav Ashi himself was a begamel legemo. He used to swallow it. And Omerle Marbar Amemel Rav Ashi, you should know that once you used vinegar that you put in the meat to cauterize that meat, you can't use it again because whatever chemical reaction is there uses up what's available, and you no longer have the same potency after it's been used once. So, sulo tani cholid be. Ask the Gemara, well, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, if you leave vinegar, you have vinegar that's very weak. I mean, then you're saying that either it's fully potentiated vinegar or you can't use it at all. How come we can even use weak vinegar that would be exactly the same? I mean, this vinegar that you used once still actually tastes more sour than the weak vinegar. So how do you explain that? Says the Gemara, Hatam ite lekiyo lepera be'ene. I explain it by explaining it as there's two different issues. One of them is what's called the kiyua de peri, and that's the sourness that is in the natural fruit. That is used up. And hocha leta lekiyo lepera be'ene, masha'en kein, in the case where you used it once, it's not going to be there. But if it's just weak, it is there. Now, what's fascinating is that this is a profound insight into the nature of vinegar, which was only discovered in this century, which is absolutely amazing. And that's because the one taste that never made any sense in terms of the detecting, all the other tastes, there was a clear mechanism for detecting the taste. The problem was that taste of sourness that we associate with vinegar, it was not clear where it was being processed because it was not, surprisingly, a function of the pH, because you could have acid that was much more powerful than acetic acid, which is vinegar, and it would not taste anywhere near as sour as the vinegar would. And this would drive people crazy, because, I mean, if it's a direct proton, it's a mechanism of detecting loose protons, so then the pH should be the sole determining factor, but it isn't. And nobody could figure this out until they determined that there were two completely different mechanisms that were confusing everybody. And one had to do with the structure of the molecule that was able to actually penetrate the cells in the tongue, that had to do with the structure of that particular fruit, the acetic vinegar. And there you were detecting not simply the pH, but something else, which the Gemara is calling over the kiyua de peri, which is amazing. So it may be weak, but that's weak in terms of the acid. But in terms of its own power to be able to be cauterizing the dam, that it's strong. And that's the kiyua de peri. It's really quite amazing.